Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
At 11:18 on Grant and Danny, Landon Collins absolutely hates the Giants. You should like Landon Collins more for how much he dislikes his former team. We'll get into that. Plus, this hour, Patrick Corbin, bad again last night. Three straight clunkers. Starting to be time to worry about the lefty in the Nationals rotation. We can get into that as we continue. But right now, let's set the table for tomorrow night's Game 6 in the NBA Finals. A Warriors win, we get a seventh game. A Raptors win, and they are champions for the first time. Mike Prada joins us now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. He is the SB Nation NBA editor. Of course, founded Bullets Forever here in town. Mike, let's just start with Durant going down. Your thoughts on what was one of the more difficult scenes in recent NBA playoff history?
Yeah, I honestly just thought it was sad. Like, I think we spent a lot of time over the last 11 o'clock in the game, however many hours that is. I can't do math. Just thinking about who's to blame for this situation. Did the Warriors do a disservice to him? Was there pressure from his teammates? You know, were there whispers that he felt like he had to prove his toughness? All of that. I just think it's like kind of the situation just sucks. I don't think there's anyone who's exclusively to blame, and I don't think there's anyone who is exclusively off the hook. You know, I think we wouldn't be talking about this if, like, he didn't, what sounds like he tears his Achilles. We wouldn't be talking about it if, you know what, he just went out after a few in the second half, like Kevon Looney did, to quiet fanfare and no new injury. So I think it's just a really tough situation, and that I think a lot of people who had the right intentions can still mess up and create something like that. So I just think it sucks. I mean, there's really no other way to say it.
What does it mean for the league? And, Mike, I guess it's sort of a general question here, because we spend a lot of time talking about where guys are going to play next while games are still going on. It's just kind of where the league is right now, right? The story starting in November is, where's Kyrie going to go? And where's, you know, Paul George going to go before that? And Jimmy Butler, et cetera. And now Durant's there. I initially thought, here's what's going to happen. Durant will just opt in, take that $31 million and rehab in Golden State. But I'm not so sure anymore. I think one of these teams that's desperate might just eat a year in hopes that he gets back to being himself and get, you know, 3 years of what they hope is maybe a B-plus version of Durant, which is still pretty damn good. What do you think it's going to mean for free agency?
You know, it's really tough to say. I think if you're a team like the Knicks, right, and you've built this kind of strategy to have enough room to chase Durant, and you've obviously gotten some signals where, however you got them, that he has interest in coming to your team. If something like this happens, I feel like you need more than however many hours that passed to really sort of process exactly what you should do from here. So I think there's a lot that's still left to play out here. You know, he hasn't even gotten his full diagnosis yet. So whether that changes, that may it sounds like he doesn't want to opt in, like you said, but, you know, that might change if he gets news that he didn't like. The only thing I'd say is that if you're Durant, and however you feel was, you know, the blame or cause of what happened, do you really want to go back to Golden State for a year that's basically going to be your rehab year? It could be, obviously the grass could be a lot worse on the other for another team, but, you know, after what you went through, I mean, like, I guess, like, it would be like a funny spite move, but I feel like it's not probably the best move for his long-term career. You know, the best move for his career is probably to get other opinions on what happened to him, because obviously.
Hold on, let me just clarify real quick. Are you saying because medically they screwed up? Is that your point?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, I don't know who actually what the actual point is, but if you're Durant, I'm sure you feel at some level that you were told that there was no less risk of a serious injury like that happening than what happened. So I don't understand how you could go back to the same team that told you that for a year and just sort of let it pass, even if you're not going to play. I feel like if it were me, I would not want to do that.
Mike Prada on Grant and Danny covers the NBA. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Prada SBN. Do the Warriors have enough in the tank to pull off two more wins?
I don't think so, but I also didn't think they'd have enough in the tank on Monday, I should say. Like it seems really hard for me to believe. But then again, you know, it was hard for me to believe that they would roll without Durant for the short period of time that they did. They definitely will have the energy of the home crowd. But, I mean, at this point, like, it's just – they're so banged up. They have so little really left. You know, they can't really capitalize on the energy and the emotion. I think you're going to see a repeat of what happened in Game 4, to be honest, where it just – they come out really hard. They come out really fast. They play really frantically, but they just don't have the energy to kind of sustain it. And Toronto will be the better team. But, you know, I thought that would happen in Game 5, too, and it didn't. So what do I know?
Follow Mike Prada at Mike Prada SBN on the Twitterverse. What I've been surprised by is, and I was wrong about this in every step of the way, Mike. I thought Philadelphia was going to beat Toronto. I thought Milwaukee was going to do it. I was positive Golden State was going to do it. And here they are, poised to win the finals. The Kawhi Leonard being excellent thing is no surprise, but I feel like he's dragging Toronto out of being the Raptors that they've been for the last 5 years. Really good regular season club, but when it comes to, you know, playoff time, Kyle Lowry shrinks or DeRozan would have shrunk or whomever. All these role guys seem to be embracing their role and thriving in it. How much of that is Kawhi? How much of that is Nick Nurse maybe getting the most out of these guys?
Well, there's, I think, another factor that you didn't mention that's a big part of it, which is how many of these guys were actually the guys that were on those previous Toronto teams. I mean, Marc Gasol is new here. Pascal Siakam is a very different player than he was in previous season. Danny Green is new here. There really aren't that many vestiges of the old Raptors there anymore. So, I mean, you're right. Some of it is Nick Nurse. I think he has a really good way of keeping everybody calm. Some of it is Kawhi, I think, in Game 4 in particular. You know, you saw as he was great, but also his demeanor. They just sort of – nothing really matters to them. They don't get afraid of the moment because there is no moment. I think that there's some of that. I think that certainly helped Lowry in particular. But I think the most fundamental reason is just that it's a totally different team. Like, I don't think there's really much reason to overthink it, you know. If the Raptors had Marc Gasol last year, maybe they would have had a better chance to beat Cleveland. You know, if they had Danny Green last year instead of the players they had, they may have beaten Cleveland or at least competed better. You know, they may not have been rattled when LeBron goes in that first game and they steal, you know, victory from the jaws of defeat. It's just a different team. You know, I don't think there's really a whole lot more to it than that.
Mike, before you were a national analyst, you, of course, were a Wizards mark who did a good job covering this team. Curious to get your thoughts on their GM search, in air quotes. I think the search is still ongoing. We're not really sure exactly what's happening at this point.
Yeah, I think this has all been kind of silly. I'm worried from the outside that, I mean, I know there's a lot of noise about, like, well, what if they can recruit Masai Ujiri and what if they can do this and why rush to hire someone if there's a chance you could get him? I don't know, man. That sounds a lot like the Kevin Durant stuff in 2016 to me.
I know, right?
You know, like, so I'm just really not sure. And I don't know why it's going so slowly. I don't know if maybe they're getting more information about, like, their state in the league than they thought they would. I don't know. But to me, like, this isn't necessarily patience. I think this is just, you know, lack of willingness to do something. And, you know, you can't on the one hand say we want a collaborative front office, you know, that will work together and resolve these divisions and blah, 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 which is what I think Leontis has said a lot. And then on the other hand say, well, we're actually going to hold out for the biggest name on the market. You know, those two things don't really seem congruent to me. So I don't know if it's ultimately going to matter in the end, but something about this doesn't feel right. Yeah. I would be concerned.
I'm 100% with you. The we're going to have a collaborative effort. We're also going to get the guy that in order to woo him here, you have to give him ultimate power and complete autonomy.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't jive. It reminds me of in Good Will Hunting, when Will Hunting has all these interviews set up, and then he goes on that long rant about like shrapnel in his buddy's rear and, you know, clubbing a baby seal. I'm holding out for something better. There's nothing better. You're the ugly guy that doesn't have a prom date. Ask somebody to prom. You need, and if he's not the right guy, do this again in 2 years. There's no desperation, Mike, and that's what's so frustrating to me. I get you don't want to just hire the first dude off the street, but you've got to understand your place at the table here, right?
You could argue that, okay, I think Fred Katz said this really well in The Athletic. I forget when, but if you want to take the point that, like, yes, we want to be really careful about this search and cast a wide net, then cast a wide net. It sounds like they aren't even interviewing that many people, you know, so that doesn't make any sense. I would respect it more if they were really, like, sort of interviewing. I mean, they didn't talk to David Griffin. They didn't talk to Trajan Langdon. They didn't talk to all these other guys that they could talk to. Maybe they did and it hasn't been reported, but that's casting a wide net. This is just, I mean, I don't know what this is.
I don't know what it is.
Mike Prada, check out his work, SB Nation, as he covers the NBA Finals. Game 6 is tomorrow night. Could be the last game at Oracle Arena. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, guys.
See you, buddy.
Always appreciate having you on. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Let's get into Patrick Corbin next. He has pitched 3 bad outings in a row for the Nationals. Last night they had 9 hits, 5 runs, got 2 homers from their star, and it wasn't enough, despite having Corbin on the hill, because he has not been good for a couple weeks now. What's wrong? We'll discuss on Grant and Danny.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Yesterday on the show, as we welcome you back to Grant and Danny, Beltway Blitz at noon, we're going to talk about the U.S. Women's National Team scoring 13 goals and celebrating each of those 13 goals against Thailand. Some people around the world not very happy with their decision to have done so. Get into that in an hour next. Hour at 12:18. But Patrick Corbin yesterday, we said on the show, big start for him. He had 2 straight clunkers in a row. This is the $140 million offseason acquisition by the Nationals, who's vital not because of what they paid him, although that's part of it, but pivotal because behind Strasburg and Scherzer, you need a number 3 starter who goes out and gives you quality outings if you're going to get back into this chase. And for the early part of the year, you could make the case he was the Nats' best pitcher for 5 weeks. For a couple months, he was an all-star caliber arm. I mean, you and I even debated after his 2 bad starts this week, is he in consideration? And we both said if he gets back on track quickly and has a couple gems in a row, he could make the all-star team. He's 1 good start from having his ERA back in the 3s. So this has not been a terrible year. But if you look at the recent sample, 3 straight outings, it's been really bad for him. He was in Cincinnati against the Reds, got knocked out in the 3rd inning, 11 hits, 6 earned runs. Then last time out, before last night, in San Diego on the road trip, he only pitched 5 innings because he walked 5, gave up 5 hits and 3 earned runs, taken out of the game quickly. Last night, the Nats gave him a 2-0 lead before he ever took the mound. He got 2 outs, one of which was hit pretty hard, but on 3 pitches. So he was in line for a 4 or 5 pitch first inning, and you thought, thank goodness this is just what he needed to settle in. He ends up giving off a ball hit off the wall with 2 outs, then walks back-to-back batters. Small strike zone, got pinched a little bit, but he wasn't close enough to the strike zone routinely to make it all that big of a anti-umpire
thing. Gripe, yeah.
So he loads the bases and proceeds to immediately give up a grand slam on a changeup in the middle of the plate. 4 runs in the first inning, eventually gave up 7 earned runs in 5 innings. He gave the Nats almost no chance on a night where their offense was pretty good. 3 straight outings, 3 straight duds for Patrick Corbin. And I told you, if he stunk again, I was going to be concerned I'm now concerned.
ERA's gone up 1.5 over these three starts. I have several factors as to what's happening. I think the first thing that I would do is I would not have him throw to Yan Gomes for a couple starts. Yan Gomes already has 7 pass balls. That's now a career high. I don't know what's going on with him.
Second highest rate in baseball.
He is not good this year. I don't know if this is the new normal. I don't know if he's just having a bad season. I don't know what's happening. I can't do that for a little bit. I'll mix it up just to give him a different look. I'll have him throw to Kurt Suzuki. It's worked wonders for Max Scherzer.
Also, I don't know if it was Corbin's fault or Gomes' fault, but I'm pretty sure he got beat on that grand slam on a changeup instead of a fastball or a slider.
Mm-hmm.
He's a two-pitch guy. He throws his changeup 4% of the time. He throws his curveball 4% of the time.
Yeah, the curveball is a get-me-over, just one different look back to what he does.
Fastball, slider, 92%+ of his pitches are those two pitches. He got beat for a grand slam on his changeup. If Yan Gomes' decision was to call that pitch and that wasn't Corbin's idea, then add that to the pile against Yan Gomes.
Yeah, so my first thing is I'm having him throw to Kurt Suzuki next time just to change the look and maybe we catch lightning in a bottle. But the biggest thing, and this is what Patrick Corbin does as good or better than anybody in the sport when he's right. He gets you to swing at pitches out of the strike zone. He's excellent at it, right? Max Scherzer's great at it. All the great strikeout artists are. It's really hard to get guys to swing and miss consistently at pitches in the strike zone. You got to get guys to chase. How do you do that? That fastball, when he's right, is located at the knees, bottom of the zone, bottom of the zone, bottom of the zone. Look at that home run he gave up yesterday that went about 490 million feet to center field to Eloy Jimenez. That's a fastball up. That's 90 at a little above the belt. You can't live there. Other guys can. Max Scherzer, climb the ladder. Steven Strasburg, climb the ladder. Tanner Rainey, climb that ladder. Patrick Corbin should never be up there. Unless he's going way up there, like over the head on a strike two pitch, try to get somebody to chase way out. You can't throw a pitch up there. That's a location mistake, right? No, you just can't do that. And when he's right, go back a couple starts. I believe it was the postgame show that you and I did against the Giants, right? That day piece, right, in April. He didn't miss high with a ball once the entire game. I tracked it. It was something I was kind of looking for to have something to talk about postgame. He did not miss up in the zone once. He threw a ball out of the zone one time to induce a foul ball from the hitter by design. He went purposely out of the strike zone. But he didn't miss up once. He's missing all over the place now. There's something funky going on there. This is when a pitching coach earns his money. This is when a pitcher earns his money. Sean Doolittle goes back in the lab. Max Scherzer notices a thing about his posture. Next thing you know, he's added 2 miles an hour to his fastball on average since 3 starts ago. You got to find something because right now he's in a funk. It's not going well. It's just not. And they need him to be better than he's been.
So I'm going to give you some numbers to kind of back up the opinions that you're providing. O swing percentage is the percentage of pitches a batter swings at outside of the strike zone. This year, batters are swinging at pitches out of the strike zone on Corbin about 33% of the time. Third of the time, not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Down 5% from last year.
Yep.
And that number, you have to imagine, over the last 3 starts, when we're trying to figure out what's wrong, way worse than his season totals, because earlier in the season, he was his old self. So I'd be willing to bet that it's high 20s, maybe even 30%. Their ball's out of his hand. I mean, he's bouncing some sliders in. They don't look like strikes for as long. You need a slider to come into that same tunnel, basically, as a fastball all the way. And the quality of the slider just hasn't been as good, and that's the pitch that gets him by. As far as the O swing percentage in terms of basically how often contact rate out of the strike zone, so what they call O contact,
mm-hmm.
percentage of time a batter makes contact with the ball when swinging at pitches thrown out of the strike zone. Last year in Arizona, 52% of the time, if Corbin throws you a pitch that's a ball and you swing at it, you will hit it. 52% of the time. This year, that number is up to almost 57% of the time. So that's a pretty decent little jump there when you look at the stuff out of the zone is more hittable. And to your point, I think a lot of this is the trend of the last 3 starts. Now, there are some other things you could be a little bit worried about if you wanted to. I'm not particularly, but at one point in time, Patrick Corbin averaged 93 miles an hour on his fastball on the dot back in 2013. He's had injuries, TJ, since, you know, there's been a different pitcher later in his career. He missed all of 2014. This year, though, his fastball velocity, which is almost identical to last year, 91.2, is officially the lowest of his career.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're just looking at how hard he's throwing his fastball, 93 in 2013, 92.9 in 2015, 92.6 in 2016, 91.3 in 2018, 91.2 this year. It's gone down a little bit almost every single season. Not to a point where you're alarmed. 91 miles an hour with his fastball is just fine. The bigger issue to me is he's just not commanding his fastball. When you have two pitches, and I view him as a two-pitch guy, yes, he throws the occasional changeup.
He threw a great one yesterday, too, by the way.
Really good one at one point. Mm-hmm. And yes, he could throw a curveball occasionally. But again, about 93% of his 100 pitches in a start are fastballs or sliders. That's right. A two-pitch pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially like what Sean Doolittle would do over 100 pitches out of the bullpen. All fastballs and sliders. When you do that, you have to command your fastball. It's statistical and career suicide if you don't, you have two pitches. It's over. And he right now is not locating his fastball. And it's not that much more complicated than that.
And the buyer beware folks on Patrick Corbin in the offseason, what they said was, hey, should we be, or the question at least was raised, should we be concerned with a guy that throws so many sliders for a long-term deal, right? Because there's a number of things that happen. Ultimately, your fastball velocity is going to start to go down. That slider, while it's still going to be effective, becomes less so when your fastball doesn't play up as much. Long-term, he's already had an arm injury, et cetera. Is this a guy you want to give a long-term deal to? Still way too early to put a referendum on what's happened. These are three bad starts here. We're talking a six-year sample of 30 starts apiece. So three starts and 180, hopefully, is nothing. But you do have to wonder when you start to mention the decrease in velocity. He's not a 99 guy that needs to do that to get outs. He's shown how effective he can be throwing 91, 92. But it is something to kind of be mindful of, right? It's why some teams didn't want to go to that sixth year. Some teams didn't want to go to that level because they were concerned long-term about kind of his career trends. Last year, had his best year, and the Nationals bet that that's the new normal, right? The same way they bet on Anibal Sanchez. This is the new normal. Forget about the previous several years where he was either mediocre or pretty decent in Corbin's case to downright bad in Sanchez's case. We're buying that this new version is the real version.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
So you hope he can get back to that because he was great for the first month plus.
Yeah, I'm not really even willing yet to talk about big picture, the contract, or whether this is a mistake. I think he's an outstanding pitcher. I think what you saw in April and most of May is exactly who Patrick Corbin's going to be over the next couple of years. The problem is right now it's not happening. You just don't have a margin for error to have your number three starter lay eggs every fifth day.
He can't do this.
I've already got to worry a little bit about Eric Fetty. I've already got to worry about Anibal Sanchez, although he's actually given you three good outings in a row now. I can't afford to worry about Patrick Corbin. He's filed away into the list of, hey, good, Patrick Corbin's on the mound. We should be able to win tonight. When that's not the case as a Nats fan, that's a problem. If you want to discuss Corbin, are you concerned? Give us a shout, 800-636-1067. Happy to talk with you on the Hadid carpet cleaning listener lines. Next, Landon Collins really hates the Giants. And as a Redskins fan, that should make you very happy. You're listening to the fan. Grant and Danny on the fan, 11:45, our double play is 10 minutes out. Do you have a double play today, or do you just want to go hard with Dine and Dash?
Oh, you know what? This is your day. This is your day. We should do that.
I can bring up some of the restaurants.
Yeah, that's what I want.
We can put together a game plan.
I've got one. It's about E3, the huge mega conference that just happened where all the game companies do stuff.
You should feel free to go in on that.
I will save it for tomorrow because this is not my time. Herb Brooks, little Keebler elf style, this is your time.
This is our time.
Exactly right.
Landon Collins is our guy in Washington, D.C. Landon Collins really doesn't like the New York Giants.
Good.
Isn't it annoying when a player leaves a team and signs in the division and you know they can't stand their opponent and you know that they can't wait to play that team, but they won't admit it to you? It's just another game. Oh, these guys, they might as well be the Minnesota Vikings to me. What's the difference? No, it means a little more to you, Landon.
No, there's a difference, and you know it.
Landon Collins has the proper dislike for a team in the division that he used to play for. A disdain that I think Redskins fans can get used to. Here is NBC Sports Washington's audio from Landon Collins. One of the many things he said at minicamp.
Oh, I've been ready to tackle Saquon. Definitely, that's my guy, though, man. All love to him, and he's been doing his thing, as we all know. But when I get to meet him in the hole this time, it's not going to be. It's going to be full go.
Do you think the Giants can make the right decision?
We'll see when this upcoming year. That's all I can say. We can see in this upcoming year. I think it's going to be special.
Is that circled? Those two games they circled in a little bit extra red on the schedule.
Y'all saw the bullseye shirt that Joe made me. It's just like that for the next 6 years. Yes, it's just like that. I feel more of a Redskin now after going through OTAs, after being there for a while, after meeting the guys, after hanging out with them, having great times. Oh, man, I feel like I'm at home with those guys, you know. So, yeah, I don't feel like I bleed blue anymore.
Landon Collins sounds like Mr. Redskin there. If you're a fan of this team in D.C.,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how you can hear that and it can't be music to your ears. I don't know how that's not McCartney singing Hey Jude. That, to me, is what you want when you bring a guy over in the division. It's two games on the schedule, and there's only 16, oh, by the way. So you already have the built-in rivalry. He doesn't like the Eagles. He doesn't like the Cowboys necessarily because he's had to play them a couple times a year vying for the division. But now 2/16 of the season is going to be made up of him playing a team that he hates. And by the way, that was the New York media talking to him about a charity softball game that he had played in. So he knew. That wasn't like a bunch of D.C. folks with the mics out in Ashburn in the comfort of your own home and you don't know if anyone in New York's going to find out about it. No. He was back in the Big Apple at a charity softball game knowing that quote's getting out there and he's basically putting a bullseye on his own back saying, I'm coming for you. He said he can't wait to tackle Saquon Barkley.
I am not naive. I know that times have changed. I do. I'm very aware of it. I'm aware of the information. I'm aware that as soon as the game's over, everybody's dapping each other up and they're exchanging jerseys and there's hugs and they're probably going to pray at center field at the 50-yard line. I know. I know that. I also know that I could be mocked by people younger than me. Mock away. I long for the days when the team that I loved, in regardless of sport, hates the teams that I hate just as much, if not more, than me. It was better then. It just was. Make fun of me all you want. Call me the old man, stand in the way of progress, using a flip phone. I don't care. It was better when Joe Gibbs said, I don't want to wear blue because it makes me sick. It was better when we ran the Rigo drill. It was better when the Hogs hated the Dallas Cowboys and it meant the world to beat them. It was better then. I love that. Now, free agency guys change teams all the time, and it's part of it. Interdivisional deals, it's the most normal thing in the world.
And you know my stance is.
I want that.
Players don't really care about the rivalries.
They don't care at all.
I think to Landon Collins or any other Redskin, beating the Cowboys is going to be more important than beating the Jets. Only because you are in direct competition mm-hmm. with that team for the division title. Only because it works really, in a sense, as a two-game in the standings contest. When you win and the Cowboys lose, it's a swing in both directions. They don't dislike the Cowboys because of the star on the helmet or Dallas or the rivalry between the fans. They don't care about that.
They don't care. And
the anecdote I always use, Stephen Bowen's going to dinner with DeMarcus Ware and the Cowboys when the Redskins played Dallas in Dallas. I mean, these guys, by and large, have either played together, have some relationships. You're in the league long enough. You got rapport with a bunch of dudes in all the locker rooms. And as you said, it has. It's changed.
I know that. I'm very aware of it.
All I want, though, is for players just to tell me how you actually feel. Give me something real. A little meat on that bone. Like Kirk Cousins is going to say, presumably, at some point this offseason or regular season when it comes up that he's going to be playing the Redskins. This is just another game. We got to get to the playoffs.
We need to win it because we need to win
it. Exactly. We need this one. This is not about me. This is about the Vikings, blah, blah, blah. That's just not true. You know that internally Kirk Cousins is thinking, if I have a great game, all those fans, whoever they were, that were wrong about me have to wear it for a week.
If I want them to swallow that 3:30 and 4.
Exactly. If I go out and light up the Redskins, Bruce Allen and Dan Snyder look like idiots for one Sunday from 1 to 4. I think that game's on primetime at Monday or Thursday or something. I don't know. Isn't that a night game? It's got to be.
I don't know the top of my head.
Believe it might be Sunday Night Football. Can you dig on that for me? But the point of the dude's story, as you like to say, is Cousins will probably say it's just another game. It's not another game. We all know that. The fact that Landon Collins is just owning this and saying, I can't stand the Giants. They broke up with me when I didn't want to be broken up with. They made a mistake. They're going to pay for it. I will make them look foolish for what they've done. I love that.
It's your Thursday night piece.
Thursday?
It's your Thursday piece, 10-24. 10-24.
Short week into that game?
Short week into that game.
Who do they play right before that?
49ers on Sunday.
Oh, I forgot.
And then it's the Vikes.
It's the Kyle Shanahan, Kirk Cousins four-day swing. Designed so that essentially in a calendar week.
The Redskins' ex-girlfriend week.
Right. We get to see all of our favorite exes who are pretty good looking.
Everybody
right
is in good shape. I mean, like, Kyle, for a while, gained some weight, and it wasn't going that well for him, but they got a chance this year to bounce back.
I'd get with Kyle if nobody knew it. I would text Kyle and say, hey, Kyle, can you swing by for an hour or
Kyle,
two?
Kyle, you up?
You think I wouldn't text Kyle and ask if he was up right now?
I'd text Kyle right now.
Text Kyle right now.
You know what I would do is like our shared Facebook story. It's like 7 years ago, you guys did this. I'd be like, Kyle, remember this? LOL. What's going on with you, man?
I like Jay. I'm happy with Jay. I'd love to know what life would be like with Kyle.
Who'd you be happy with right now, this minute? Thanos snap. Jay or Kyle?
I'm a little bit more of a Kyle guy. I like Jay a lot. I really do.
You're more Kyle guy, the guard from Virginia.
A little bit. I would go McVay 1, Kyle 2, Jay 3 among the recent good at their job offensive minds. And I think Jay Gruden has done a good job here. I think I'm probably one of his bigger proponents on the air only because I think he gets so much undeserved and undue heat.
Mm-hmm.
He's just kept this team afloat amid drama, turmoil, controversy, injuries, whatever. He's not great by any means. I think he's a pretty good coach. I think Kyle Shanahan schematically, great. Sean McVay, brilliant. So I would go with them. Same thing at quarterback, though. Cousins versus Keenum and a rookie? I would like to tell you that I would be curious to know what Kirk Cousins is up to. Now, if Dwayne Haskins is great, conversation's different.
I don't have to worry about it.
Rookie contract.
I mean, I'm on my first date. We don't have much to talk about. It's awkward right now.
First date? We got a long ways to go before I know that this is better than what I had. But I promise you, Case Keenum's not better than what I had. What I had was pretty good. Case Keenum's not that. But that will be Redskins ex-girlfriend week. We need to start branding that a little bit.
The Redskins ex week is something. That October is going to be fascinating.
Double play next on Grant and Danny. It is Dine and Dash night in D.C. I'll explain that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Friday night, Ashburn, Old Ox Brewery, their fifth year anniversary. Oh, thank you very much, Tommy. Doing some stand-up with a couple great buddies, Lafayette Wright, Dominic Rivera. Tickets are available online. Just go to oldoxbrewery.com. That place is awesome. The beer is great. I love them. It's going to be a blast. That's Friday night at 8. Got myself a date. Going to be so great. Now, Grant, floor is yours.
Is that Nutty Professor?
It is. Old school, right?
Why did you just do that?
I don't know. When I hear Friday night at 8, I automatically associate it with the Nutty Professor.
That is so funny.
Friday night at 8, got myself a date. I can't
stop. He's like running up the steps and eating the M&Ms and ice cream. That's so funny. Jose Andreas and World Central Kitchen present Dine and Dash, 30 restaurants, unlimited fun. Tonight is the night. Jose Andreas, an internationally recognized culinary innovator, best-selling author, educator, TV personality, humanitarian, and chef.
Mensch.
Runs this event to benefit World Central Kitchen to fight hunger. So he and a bunch of the best chefs, not only in the area, but in the country, come together to put on these events. A couple markets here in D.C., they absolutely kill it. The way this works is you pay up front. If you're on the ball like I am, and you do this every year, as soon as the date drops, you get online and you get the initial price.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's around $100 a person. General admission, last I saw, they were still selling tickets. $150, I believe. You leave your wallet at home. You dine in 30 top D.C. restaurants in one night. They shut down some of the best restaurants in the city and or carve out spaces in those restaurants for you to come in. But most of these places just forego business for the night to do this charitable endeavor.
There are so many places, I'm looking at the restaurant list now, that either I've been to that are outstanding or that I am desperate to go to.
It's some of the best places in the city.
It's a legit list, man.
Eat and drink at your starting restaurant. Choose your next stop. Up to you. For basically, I think it's 6 p.m. it starts tonight. It goes till 10 if memory serves. 4 straight hours. Do whatever you want. There's shuttles to all three neighborhoods. The three neighborhoods this year are, as always, my good friends over at Penn Quarter, 14th Street, and added this year, so we will start there because we haven't been to these yet.
So you're going to the Wharf.
The Wharf.
Okay.
So here are the restaurants. In the Wharf, we've got Officino, where we are starting tonight. Rappahannock Oyster Bar.
Which is amazing.
The Tiki Spot over there. I forget the name.
Tiki TNT.
Mi Vida Restaurant, which I have not been to. What is the one? La Vie. That is on tonight. And also the Kith and Kin place over in the Wharf. So only 6, I think. There's less restaurants there.
Yep.
Then we'll probably hop on over to Penn Quarter.
That's the hub, right?
That's where it goes. Among the places I really like over there, we'll stop at Taco Bamba. Oyamel always has a great spread. Cuba Libre, very, very good. Bar Deco, Boca Ria, Gina Chilcano, Jaleo, which is like small plates, pretty good. What else is there? Bantam King. I never really do that one. That's like a... Oh, what's the thing that everyone over talks about? Pho?
It's pho.
Not for me. It's just, especially it's like summer and it's like hot soup.
You don't like noodles and meat?
It's fine. In the summer, I'm not like,
I get
I'm
you.
Going to 30 places. I'm not wasting time getting pho at Bantam King. No offense to anybody. 14th Street. Barcelona.
Are you
going
to make it to 14th?
We will do all three neighborhoods.
Wow.
We're not going to get to every restaurant, though. We're probably going to get to, I would think we'll do all 6 at the Wharf. Probably get to 5 or 6 in Penn Quarter. And then the plan is to get to 14th Street because we like Barcelona. Doi Moi, you know that one. Have you been there?
No, I have not been, but you went. Didn't you go last year? You told me it was great.
So good. Meat skewers out the yin-yang. Loved it. I believe is El Centro. Is that the one I went to that you told me to go to before?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's not Michelle Richard.
I'm not sure who
that's
it is.
That's El Central, I think. That's a different spot.
El Centro is awesome.
I've never been there. Estadio, I have been to. Great. But again, these are some of the best restaurants in the city, Danny.
Absolutely. The VIP experience
tonight
includes Del Mar, which is one of the great restaurants, not only in D.C., but in the country.
Yep.
So if you get the VIP.
And Flight, the wine bar, as well as a Denson liquor bar. Now, I have not done the VIP situation, so it's for people that have more money than me.
Of course.
I think, and this is all going to charity, of course, but it's like $400, I think, to do VIP.
Mm-hmm.
And you just get more options and more restaurants. I stick with the general admission.
What is your game plan? Because I know what I would go in thinking I'll be able to do, and then I'd find something that I liked, and I wouldn't stop.
So the only thing I do is, I at least at the first several restaurants, and I avoid the places where I know they have a lot of really good meat until later in the night, I try to do small tastes, just a bite here or there.
Discipline.
And a couple sips of each cocktail at each spot for at least 7 or 8 stops. As of 7:30, hour and a half in, I will have a pretty gigantic meal somewhere. That's going to end up being normally at a place where they're giving you a lot of grilled meat. But for at least the first half of the night, I try to go very, very small with my portions.
The discipline that it takes to do that and pull that off is hard, I'll be honest with you. That is a mature adult approach that you have and you have to take. If you can maintain that discipline, good for you. Because what would happen if it was me and my group who did it? We'd have all the right ideas, and then
you just go.
And then the wives would be like, "Oh my god, this one's great!" And then they'd stay here and have like 9 drinks.
So
and then
we'd make
it to 2 restaurants.
If you are doing this, whether it's tonight, first of all, if you are, please say hello. If we bump into one another on our paths, if you're doing this in the future, which you should do, the Arden Key that I will give you. Who's Arden Key? Why do I know that name?
UVA backup forward.
Okay, good. The Jimmy Key.
Pretty incredible.
Left-handed pitcher, Baltimore Orioles.
Soft tossing, Jimmy Key.
So soft tossing. The key to a successful, the Frederick Key. That's right, Tommy.
The Virginia Tech Hokies third down.
Key play. Is that what you're doing? The key to a win, I think, in this event is a small group of people.
Yeah.
I have seen groups of 10 or 12.
Defeated.
Can't have it, can't coach with them, can't do it.
Can't do it.
Tonight, we have the biggest group we've ever had, but I think we have still a good number. We have a total of 6 tonight. That's the max I think you should do. I've got my brother coming with. He's a chef. I love having him there to explain some of the things we're eating. The wife, her favorite night of the year, babysitter, that kind of deal.
I was going to say, who's got President Reagan?
Two aunts.
Secret Service has him tonight.
That's right. My sister and sister-in-law are coming over to the house. And then we've got two friends as well.
Can I express my surprise? This is not a Joan. This is not a Joan Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
Pleasant surprise and excitement, I would say. Some of the places that you named that you like that say you, quote, always have a good spread.
Yes.
I wouldn't expect. Oyamel, a delicious Mexican kitchen from Jose Andres. You mentioned Yaleo, which I think Tapas is the greatest con ever pulled on people.
That's a good
place. No one should do it. But you mentioned, Boca Ria, Taco Bamba. These are all things I never thought you'd care about, enjoy, in any capacity.
Think about it, though. So it's not like you're ordering just off of their menu. They're doing kind of bite-size, easy-to-go. So, like, it's tacos with not a lot on it. It's, in the case of some of these places, what I loved about it might be they do, like, a frozen pop because it's the summertime.
Sure, sure.
Or they do, like, some type of dessert that you can just eat on the run as you get there at 8:30 at night or something. So it doesn't necessarily mean I love everything on their menu. I wouldn't get overly excited.
Okay. Still, you're branching out to me.
But I've had great experiences at these places.
You dismissed tacos as an entire food genre not that long ago. And now you're going to taco joints. I mean, the idea that you wouldn't want a burrito because it was, quote, too Mexican-y. Now we're eating the Mexican joints. We're
there
thriving.
There was a time.
We're thriving.
I would not go there for a meal.
Whole meal of food?
Just me and the wife. I would go to a steakhouse or something way more delicious. But on a night where I'm just no wallet, just walking in and out of places, getting a quick bite. There's nothing I wouldn't go.
How many places will you get kind of like the same thing?
So this is a good question.
Yeah.
The first year we really went crazy and we got over 20. Last year I think we were down around 16. I would prefer to get to, I'd like to be in the high teens. If we could get to 17 to 20 tonight, that sweet spot, I would be thrilled.
That would be impressive.
That means all three neighborhoods though, which that could be difficult. By the way, I'm being told Arden Key is a football player at LSU. Is that not right?
Or maybe it is.
Defensive end at LSU.
Braxton Key. I did this before. I made the same mistake.
Guy, you? I wasn't going to bring it up. This?
I did this. Yeah.
First name, last name situation?
Yeah, I did this before.
What?
Yeah. Arden Key was a defensive player, as I recall, right?
Yep.
Really good. Braxton Key is the athletic small forward that didn't get enough minutes, in my opinion, for a UVA national championship team. So. I'm sure I'm right.
It really hurt their chances that he didn't get enough minutes.
Yeah, they didn't figure that out.
Beltway Blitz at noon is next. U.S. Women's National Team taking some heat from around the soccer world. 12:18 on Grant and Danny.
Grant's getting a shuttle service tonight. He's driving around. He's going to the different restaurants trying. Well, not really trying anything. He's going to get the same thing 20 different places. You want to get shuttled around, that's your choice. You want to drive a car, you should get it from Ted Burt Ford. They're celebrating their 60th anniversary this year. That's right. Good folks over at Ted Burt Ford have been taking care of folks like you and me since 1959. That's why you get a special read here on this Thursday. What's Wednesday? Today's Wednesday. That's why you get this special read. It's high class, right? It lets you know the classical music tells you that the class will wash over you as you enter the dealership. The Summer of 60 event is taking place right now. I'll do it with my classiest voice. Here we go. They're celebrating the passing of savings along to you during the Summer of 60 event. With no payments for 60 days on pretty much every model. That means savings on a wonderful new vehicle with a great buying experience, unlike any you've received before. The $12,000 off the MSRP will get you started as an appetizer. On the 2019 Ford F-150 truck, plus no payments for 60 days, and a moonsbush of $7,000 off the MSRP on a 2019 Ford Mustang, and again, no payment for 60 days. Go see my friends at Ted Burt Ford. Help.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.